Welcome to Voices in the Wilderness, conversations about church and leader health. Thank you for listening. We encourage you to keep the conversation going. We also welcome any comments or suggestions. Simply email us at podcast@amazed15.org. My name is Marcus Carlson. I'm here along with our podcast guru, Peter Belschwinder. Today, our guest is Christian Nichols. Christian is a longtime pastor and a business consultant. And so we're really excited to have Christian aboard with us today. Welcome, Christian.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, let's kind of dive in. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about a generational understanding in the church. And I know that you've been very passionate in your time where, when you served as a pastor, about being multi-generational, engaging younger generations, and have had a good bit of success with that. And now kind of as you've transitioned into the business world, it's something you spend quite a bit of your time on. So I'd be curious, maybe just share a little bit about kind of your history and what you're doing with generational understanding now.
Yeah. So I was not raised in a Christian home. And so I basically have no spiritual heritage. And when I started attending a church, it was a local church that had a van ministry and they would pick up people from the neighborhood or whatever. And so my first experience with church was basically as an outsider who did not understand any of the lingos or the things that people were saying or any of that. And so if you just fast forward to when I'm 18 years old, long story in between that, but at 18 years old, I became the youth pastor at that church. And I had a friend of mine who that we grew up together. He was already pastoring, and he was kind of one of those guys that I could look up to and ask questions to and all that. But so from the time I was a teenager up until the current moment, I've always believed in the emerging generations, that they can do incredible things, they can change the world. And then even in those early years, not knowing what I know now, how powerful emerging generations were going to become, both, you know, politically, economically, social. I mean, they are so very powerful. If you look at just the world that we live in and what's available to them through technology, advertising, and all of those things. But so I've been working with multiple generations, even when I was a student pastor, trying to get adults to engage and help with students, trying to get students to engage with adults, trying to create experiences where they would worship together, serve together, and minister to one another. And so in this past year, I transitioned out of full-time vocational ministry into my own coaching and consulting firm. And I think what I thought all along was that the business world was just further along than the church world on certain issues, and that it would be very, very different, but it's not. What I experience now in the business world, what some would call the secular, you know, world of business. I don't really look at it that way, but it's really not any different. It's actually more tense in the business world than in the church world, trying to understand the difference in the generations and how they can actually coexist together.
Thanks, Christian. Awesome. You talked a little bit about the intergenerational aspects of the church. Can you give us some input as to why the Generation IQ is important to the church?
Oh, yeah. I mean, firstly, in the Bible, if you look in the scriptures, faith and legacy are all measured communally. They're all measured via the whole village or the whole tribe or the whole community coming together around these ideals. And, you know, after the Enlightenment, and as we began to move into the 20th century, we just became very individualistic here in the West, especially. And we just began to say, I can live life on my own. With technology, I can find answers that I would use. You know, previously, I would have to go find an elder in the village to get that information. But now I just punch it into my phone and get that. And so it's always been important for generations to act and work together. We're just now at a point where we have to be intentional to teach it, model it, and then give people opportunities to do it, because it's just not natural in the way that we live life now. It's just not natural to be around multiple generations all the time.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think certainly huge in the church and in the world. I know we use this phrase generational IQ, right? You know, what does that mean from your perspective, both in the church and outside of the church?
Yeah, there's no difference really in whether you're in the church or in the business world when it comes to generational IQ. Basically what we're saying is that we need to have at least the forethought to understand and to know that there are multiple generations present, which that's the shift. I mean, that's reality. People are living longer and at a different lifestyle. And so what's happened now is that we have five generations that can be present, maybe six anytime soon in the church especially, but in the workforce. And so you need to know how other generations think in order to be, you know, productive, in order to resolve conflict, in order to communicate effectively. So whether you're trying to move a vision forward in your local congregation, whether you're trying to get a youth ministry program or ministry that's strengthening and going, or whether you're trying to lead a Fortune 500 company, if you don't understand the players involved, you can't win the game. And so generational IQ now is of utmost importance when it comes to both the church and the workforce.
Awesome. Super helpful. When you think about, one of the things we talk about all the time is church health, leader health. So what role do you think does generational understanding, generational diversity, generational IQ, what role does that have in the church?
Yeah, I mean, teenagers are very powerful. And so when we talk about generations, typically we talk about teenagers, right? We talk about children's ministry or youth ministry, but generational ministry is everybody, right? It's everyone from grandmother who sit at the same pew for 50 years, down to the baby that's first time in the nursery. And so for someone who's leading in the church to understand that, one, you have all of this gap to close in the communication, in the understanding, biblical understanding, theological understanding. Like what I would teach a 60-year-old is not what I would teach a 6-year-old. You know, that those sort of things, the Bible's the Bible, sure, but how we would, you know, incorporate it and apply it is different. Like, if you're 50 and read the story of David and Bathsheba, it's a little different than when you're 5 and you read the story of David and Bathsheba. It's the same story, but it's different where you're at and that place in your life. And so it becomes crucial to understand not only that you have this diverse population to communicate to, but it's also important to understand that if you want to be a healthy church, you get everyone you can involved in the mission. And so the quicker you get a second grader to understand that, you know, everybody in the church is known, loved, and belonged, or whatever people would say. That's what I always said. That was the goal, was that I wanted every human to be known, loved, and belong. Now, if that's gonna happen, you have to teach that. You have to model that. You have to train people to do that. And as Andy Stanley said, vision leaks. And so you have to constantly remind everybody, hey, they're important. Yeah, but they're old and they smell funny. They're important. Oh, they're so young and they don't know what to do. They're important. Oh, they're always busy at baseball games. Yeah, it's just a season. They're still important. And so that understanding actually is probably very critical in my mind, to be very critical for a church to remain healthy and alive, right? If you just have 50 and 60 and 70-year-olds in your congregation, when they die, the church dies. And so it's always important to have that multi-generational aspect focus, but to be very intentional in reaching those different demographics.
It's really good. It sparked a lot of thoughts within me about discipleship. So when we talk about this generational IQ, and you mentioned it a little bit, you have these churches that are 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds, and they kind of cling to the church. Maybe it's the establishment, maybe it's the facility, for dear life. And they don't ever foster those healthy discipleship opportunities to raise up that generation. So I know it's a place of conflict in the church, but how would you recommend fostering discipleship and getting people to, you know, in a healthy way, bring people, young people, into leadership in the church so that it can continue on going forward?
Yeah. I think a misnomer may be that if you have young people present and older people present, that we should separate them. I think that's been like this siloed model of ministry. He's been around a while. And I get it. And I understand why that happens. I've been a part of that. But the more that you can get them in some sort of proximity to one another, the more that you can consistently bring out the benefits of both, reminding younger people what older people may possess that's important for them to hear and listen to, and reminding older people that, you know, you haven't paid your dues. You're still in the game. You're still breathing. You still need, we need your wisdom. We need your experience. But like anyone, none of us like change. We say we like change, but we don't. We really don't. And when you try to change this kind of idea in a church that we need to be multi-generational, most of the time it just means that they don't understand what it is to reach another generation, or why they should, or what does it matter if we do? But most people are just afraid to change, right? I've gone to this church my whole life. All of us people have grown up together. We were married together. We've lost spouses together. We've, you know, buried friends together. Now we're burying each other. And don't come in and change my stuff. Don't touch my stuff. Just leave it alone. Because in the human growth and development world, you enter this stage called generativity. And it's when you're kind of towards the end of your life and you begin to look back and go, did I make a difference? It's like, is this all there is to it? Or am I leaving a legacy? And those are the kind of things, if you understand that about older generations, then you can connect with them on that level. Oh, you want to leave a legacy? Well, here's how you do it. And you just challenge that. And the same is true. It's a reverse ideal, but if you ever want to see a group of people who don't like change, change where the students sit in a Sunday morning worship service from where they've always sat. We used to have this when I was a student pastor, this section it was the student section. Like all the kids sat there. But when we were growing, this church that I was serving in, we were growing very rapidly. We would do baptisms, and we wanted the family of the people being baptized to sit in this section so they see and, you know, be. And I remember the first Sunday that I came in and we had this roped off, the students lost their minds. They're like, where am I going to sit? What do I do? Why are they in our place? And I'm like, are y'all 80? What's the matter with you? Just go change. Just sit right up there in the balcony for one Sunday. You'll be fine. So again, I don't ever want us to forget that none of us like change. It's not just an older thing or a younger thing. It's just a human thing. And so convincing people that the pain of changing is less than the pain of dying, that it's less than the pain associated with no longer being able to be relevant in our community or shutting the doors. Those things tend to get people's attention when you say those things. But it is doable. It's very doable to help multiple generations appreciate what the other generations bring to the table. And that's why, you know, generational IQ, just what can I know about them? What can I appreciate about them? And what can I learn from them, even though they're different than I am?
That's great. I know I like change, but sometimes I don't. And I always, whenever I visit a church, I always look around and I'm like, where's everyone's assigned seat? Because I want to make sure I don't sit in their assigned seat. Because you always, you know, as a visitor, you sometimes get the glances of like, why is this random guy in my assigned seat? But, you know, there's a level of humility, I think, that you're talking about, too, young and old. And it's something tell people all the time, we're going to be eating humble pie until the day we die. It's just how many pieces do we need to have before then? And it reminded me of mm-hmm. One of the kids in the youth group, and their grandfather's in his 80s, and he's outlived his siblings. He's outlived his parents based on age. And he's like, why am I not dead yet? I don't want to go to church because I just want to die and go to heaven and get my reward. And it was one of those crazy perspectives as a young guy where I'm like, wow, I did not think that people thought like that. And it's interesting as a young person in ministry to understand the older generation's perspective on things and understand where their heart is and where it's going. And it's just really interesting to sit down and talk with them and just gain their knowledge.
Yeah, for sure. And for me personally, I had, again, if you go back to my church experience, a van ministry picked me up and took me to church. And that was sort of my introduction. And there were a lot of older people around me in the church. I was spiritually raised by old people. That's the way I like to say it. I was spiritually raised by old people. And so I've always had a great respect for them and always thought, hey, I was championed by a couple of older people. Why can't we just multiply that? Why can't we just get more involved? And again, that formed for me the way that I approached student men all those years. And then, you know, as I got into my education, seminary and grad work and post-grad work, I was studying family ministry. I was studying generational ministry. I was studying human growth and development. Like, how do cultures form? How do family systems come together? And what does that look like? And what does it look like spiritually? And again, we are kind of the difference maker. Those of us who say there is benefit in bringing the generations together, and it far outweighs any kind of negative thing that could happen with us programming it, with us giving these different age groups opportunities to actually worship together and serve together. It just takes intentionality, and there's going to be pushback, obviously, right? Like, no one's going to like it. But it's the way that you stay healthy for a long time, and that you reproduce health because you're reproducing discipleship. You're reproducing Christ followers throughout the generations. And it's modeled for a lifetime rather than just, you know, for an hour on Sunday.
Awesome stuff. Yeah. I think, you know, what's interesting now for me, at least in the church with generational stuff, is we do definitely have more generations coexisting than we've ever had. And certainly, they're very different. That, you know, I mean, the differences between each generation seem to become more stark as we go. But I think one thing has always been true is that mature Christians set aside their preferences for less mature Christians. And I remind people that all the time, right? Like, that I'm a parent and I set aside my wants and desires all the time for the good of my children, just as my parents did for me and just as my grandparents did for them. And I do think that, you know, that's been the model. I mean, that's the model from Genesis on, really. And I think we've lost sight of that, maybe because that's become harder, maybe because, you know, consumerism and entitlement have crept in a little more in the church, or a lot more. But, you know, I just all the time I go these churches and they're like, we don't have any young people. And I'm like, okay, so what are you willing to sacrifice? Right. And you're like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, if what you were doing were working, it would already be working. Right. And so, you know, how do we set aside, you know, our preferences, you know, for the baby Christians? And again, maturity doesn't always come with age. It's just more natural for it to come with age. But I know spiritually immature people in their 80s and spiritually mature people that are 15. But, you know, I think I love to ask, hey, what are you willing to do so that this church or the Church of Jesus Christ exists for your great, great grandchildren? And I think we have lost sight of that model of service and sacrifice to other generations. I don't know what your experience has been with that, Christian, and I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, Peter, because, I mean, you know, we are of different ages, although Christian and I are pretty close, but different experience for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because when I look around, and Marcus, I know that you guys at Amaze stay on top of a lot of this, but just the data shows that churches are growing older and dying. And I mean, the data shows it. There's nothing around that. The average size of a church has continued to decline over the last decade and a half, 2 decades. The number of baptisms and conversions are at an all-time low in almost every denomination. It's not just one. Churches by the thousands are closing their doors every week around the U.S. And again, I think this is mostly a Western problem, but not really. And so, if your church is going to survive, you have to say, "All right, let's do this." And I think there are a lot of churches who want to do it and think they want to do it. But what happens is you get in the midst of making those changes and moving forward, and people go, "But wait a minute, this is not the church that I've always experienced. And I don't really like this new experience." Even though it might be good, even though their grandchildren may love it, they push back and go, "But I've lost my church." And again, in some sort of weird way, I'll defend them. In knowing that as they age, they're losing so much, right? They're losing their friends, they're losing their spouses, they're losing their autonomy. They don't get to go and do the things they used to do. They can't hike and climb, and the body has limitations. And so I try to be really sympathetic and empathetic with older people, but at the same time, I try to be very challenging and upfront with them and go, "God's not done with you yet. You did not pay your dues, and you just coast now into the kingdom." And again, a lot of it is, what's our eschatology? Do we think the goal is heaven, or do we think the goal is, eternity with Jesus on the new earth? Because one has this end, like, "Oh, I get there and arrive." The other's like, "Oh, that's what I'm going to be doing forever." And so, in that, if we look at even our salvation, if we look at our life in Christ healthily, then we realize that what we're doing now is simply what we're going to be doing in perfection for the rest of eternity. And so why not do it now? Why not? It's not about, I think, Peter, you said that you'd never experienced somebody who's, "Hey, I just want to get old and die. Like, when can I die? I've lived a long life." And so getting people to see that any life is important, not just the ones that certain people deem important.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to answer Marcus's question without getting myself into a lot of trouble here. So, I've been involved in a church that, unfortunately, they've gone into that path of 50, 60, 70-year-old, 80-year-old people. And it's really difficult to see. And there is a desire to change, but not by the majority and not by the quote power players in the church. And if those people are unwilling to change, and a lot of it I think has to do with their denominational affiliation, but if they're not willing to change because they don't see anything wrong with their affiliation and how they're going, I mean, they're just spinning the tires. And what I see a lot of is young people like me and younger. We don't get empowered by leadership, or we're empowered, but there's an asterisk or stipulations for us that are empowered. It's like, well, yeah, you can do this, but you have to assimilate to what we are asking you to do. And it causes burnout, it causes frustration, and it causes people to leave the church. And it was only maybe 10 years ago we had a missionary that we had funded at our church for decades, and he just came in and looked around and he said, "I love it here. Nothing ever changes." And, was commenting about the pews and the chairs and the carpet and he's like, "Nothing changes, not even the light bulbs. It's great." And it was one of those tongue-in-cheek questions. And it kind of was one of those things where I was like, boy, I wonder if that was borderline prophetic what he said, because then there were a lot of young people around that were frustrated that change wasn't happening. But again, as I get older, there is that respect to that older generation and saying, yeah, I don't devalue what you have done for this place or what you have experienced in your life. I want to learn from that, but you also have to understand that I have this church's best interest in mind because I want to advance the kingdom of God as much as you do, as much as God will enable me to. I will lay down my life for that. And then what is our ultimate goal? You know, seeking and saving the lost. And if we're not doing that, it doesn't matter if we have 100 young people, if we're not seeking and saving the lost, then this is all pointless and I don't want any part of it. So that's a cold reality that I've come to as I've gone through and processed some church hurt and some of that lack of empowerment as a young person in ministry. But I still think when I go to that next place, I want to sit down with those that older generation that's been through thick and thin. One of my favorite questions I've asked some older people is, have you ever given up hope? Have you ever had your faith shattered? And how have you put the pieces back together? And those questions as a young guy are always encouraging to hear.
Well, thank you, Christian, for joining us today. Christian leads One Gen Solutions, one of our ministry partners, and you can learn more about them on our website. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to keep the conversation going. Voices in the Wilderness is brought to you by Preparing for Amazement Ministries, where we empower and equip churches and leaders to create lasting and transformational health. Visit amazed15.org to learn more. And again, if you want to reach out to us about the podcast, simply email us at podcast@amazed15.org.